Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we welcome you to
Love Letters Live. And this is a show primarily about love, obviously, and gratitude, which is so much a part of love. And gratitude felt, gratitude expressed, gratitude written down, stamped, and mailed to somebody. Why not share it if you feel it? And there are so many different kinds of love letters. Teresa, I know you've got a list your own self of
well,
what
sure,
they are.
They can be to anyone. They can certainly be romantic, but they can be to anyone at all, loved ones, family members, friends, people that you haven't seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. We've even had guests who write love letters to themselves.
That's true. We have had a couple of those. They've been wonderful. One woman wrote to her future self, and by the way, you can hear that if you like on our website, but we'll tell you about that later. So love letters, I always said, a love letter is a gift custom designed by you for one person on this planet. So it's something really unique, can't be duplicated. But having said that, we have talked about the fact that a love letter can be to more than one person. You can certainly write a love letter to a faculty, to a team of doctors who have ushered you past death's door. You can certainly do that. And our guest today, we are going to hear from in a minute or so, has actually written a letter to five women. And this is he's just mouthed a correction, to all women, but with his own romantic life guiding him. And so I want to introduce our guest today, Michael James. And Michael has just sent me a note that his email is Michael James, what is that?
Soul.
Michael James Soul. MichaelJamesSoul at AOL.com. And Michael, I'm assuming you're giving me this, so if anyone wants to share something with you directly, that will be open?
I would love to.
Okay, good. So let's get to you, and let me ask you just about yourself. And just start with, I know you're a man who loves women, and that's such a nice thing, and I know you love women from both your masculine side and your beautifully strong feminine side. And I know you multitask. And so talk about you and women. Like when you were young, what was your love life like?
Well, my first experience with love was at 16.
And,
I was a young woman I was in high school with, and it was truly falling in love. It set me on a course for the rest of my life.
But
experience.
Something must have driven you there. Were you a young boy who had crushes?
Had pressures?
Crushes.
No, not at all.
Oh,
she was, in fact, the first woman or girl that I even felt an interest in, meaning romantic or sexual. And I think it was the awakening. I mean, I was past puberty, but it occurred to me.
How nice that it finally did.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Okay, and so are you still in touch with this person?
I see her at our reunion every 5 years,
and
it's a wonderful and warm hug, but a definite shyness on her part.
Really? Because,
Well, I mean, the years go by, and her life took a different course. We broke up, and it was a comfortable breakup because it was, imposed by our church priests.
Ah, okay.
Because they thought we were too close.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was not easy.
I see. Okay. So talk about you beyond that. I mean, what is your general, what do you like about women?
It's not that I like, I love.
Yes.
Women are a mirror of ourselves, and for men to realize that and for women to understand that, they are, in effect, mirroring men. Given that, if we love ourselves, and I do love myself, it's a very natural thing to love women and to look beyond all the stereotypical qualities that we say women have and recognize that they're unique.
What are the stereotypical qualities that...
Oh, I mean, you know, from the very fundamental of Bain ones, like, you know, how would I say...
Oh, just dive right in.
You know, I don't want to say the word, but, you know, bitchy, controlling, whiny. I mean, all these things that we, you know, or you know, they don't understand me or men.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like sex enough. All of it. I mean, I don't even know them because I don't believe in them, but I hear them.
And, of course, women and men are so different. So different. It's like getting along, I used to say, it's like getting along with a good-natured iguana if you get along with one. I mean, we're just so different in so many ways.
You know, you prompt me to think of something, and that is that I'm not sure I follow that because...
The men being the good-natured iguana.
Thank you very much. But regardless,
I think foreign to each other sometimes, sadly.
That is true, but I think that's one of the pervasive misunderstandings in our society, and that is that men and women are so different. John Gray wrote, "Men are from Mars, women are from Venus." Mm-hmm. I mean, I heard him speak before the book was published. I was impressed. However, in the ultimate sense of being human, men and women are identical. We all have fears. We all have anxieties. We all have insecurities. We all have doubts. We all have passions. That's an ultimate similarity, not a difference. The rest of it's just personality.
So I want to ask, is part of your success in relationships with women that you understand this and that you find a way to get to that and to let women know that men also are vulnerable and need a little coddling and comforting. Well, everybody needs to be taken care of.
Yes, and it's not a matter of getting to it. Mm-hmm. I have established in my life very strong masculine and deep friendships with men. I have several men in my life who have been friends of mine for decades, all the way through their marriages, their divorces, our children. And what you look at when you look at a woman to find an attraction is that friendship, that equality of, this is another interesting person who has sex, meaning first an interesting person. And that's what it is. It's just not seeing them as being a bizarre bird or, you know, a piece of meat or whatever men think, you know, scary entity. It's just another person. And if a man can relate to another man, in a wholesome and friendship way, why can't we relate to women in the same way?
I agree. Well, pretty much. I mean, I'm saying pretty much because I still think that, you know, there are certain differences genetically, obviously.
Yes.
Let me ask you something. When you talk about how you are with women, the women in your family, your mother and your sister, I get the feeling that you might have grown up with really strong women.
Yes, both were.
Mm-hmm.
However,
you have one sister,
my father was stronger.
Yes, I see. Okay.
And that's a critical thing, because in that era of role-playing, if a woman was strong, and my mother was and is very strong-willed, my sister equally so, my father was stronger, and I learned to be that way too.
Strong-willed.
Stronger than anyone who wished to try to dominate me or, in fact, emasculate me, which sometimes women sadly do to men without even thinking. They emasculate us.
How?
It's through that mothering thing where you're just a poor guy and you don't understand how to do this, and let me get that shirt for you. And it's an essentially a good-natured thing to help men, but
infantilizing.
But in the end, when it becomes demeaning and it becomes expected, then the man loses something. He may not know it. He's talking about the little lady. I can't say that because the little lady or the old bag or whatever they want to call him will get on me.
Don't forget ball and chain.
Well, every time I hear that, I cringe because they're losing something if they lose that sense of masculine alpha male identity.
So it sounds like what you're saying is part of what's important is keeping the other person buoyed and at his or her strongest and most independent.
And finding that balance between two people, regardless of gender. I mean, my best friend, 35 years, is a man, and we have been balancing our different personalities so that we thrive as friends.
Nice.
Now, the same thing happened with my wife.
And you were married for a long time,
22
right?
years, 23. Same thing. A very bright and talented and could be strong-willed. We learn to balance.
You know? Can I ask you something about when you say strong-willed? What does that mean?
I think people who are basically secure with themselves, meaning so many people grow up because of our society and our educational system being insecure about themselves. They have low self-esteem. They don't have self-confidence. Their identity is a little wishy-washy. People who don't experience that, like myself and others I know, tend to be more willful, meaning they're not afraid, they're not timid, they're not shy. They may be shy, but they're not afraid to express themselves.
So you're using that in the positive sense.
Of course, absolutely.
Strong-willed as being kind of equal to inner strength that carries.
Oh, yes. Not in a sense of dominating. You know, I would have said dominating. No, it's the strength of your will, which is what we have to have.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to talk about, you've written letters always?
I'd want to say thousands, but I'll say hundreds.
Okay, but that's a great many.
Oh, yes.
So, and have these been mostly to women? Have they been to other friends?
No, I write letters.
Uh-huh.
But the vast majority of them were love letters.
To women?
Yes.
Yes, because I consider any truth of yours put on paper.
Well, I tell you, I have written letters expressing my love to my father.
Oh, nice.
I've written poems of my father. I've written letters of love to my mother, to my sister, and others.
How have they been received?
Hmm?
Do you get word back?
Yeah, it depends on the individual. Mm-hmm. If they are not comfortable receiving love, then the letter is kind of difficult for them to absorb.
So that's an interesting
point
in writing love letters, because do you need to tailor them so that the person you're sending them to can absorb them?
Of course. And just a quick anecdote about Barbara Walters interviewing four major movie stars, two women, two men. I think one was Nicole Kidman, Russell Crowe, Clooney. She asked them each the same question. What? Are you more comfortable giving or receiving love? Every one of them said giving love, which tells you that they have trouble receiving, which means they have something in their mind that says, I'm not worthy. And for someone to be loved, you have to feel worthy, or you're constantly struggling or rejecting or deflecting it.
What about, is it possible that with that feeling worthy issue, that it's sometimes a request, or they feel burdened by a request to respond?
There again, there's a certain insecurity and lack of self-identity, because it's easy to respond. If someone says to me, I think you are an absolutely wonderful man, my first thought is, why, thank you.
Oh, isn't that nice?
No, don't say that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, or if someone says, a woman says, you're one of the best lovers I've ever experienced, I say, well, I really appreciate that, because it's not often told to me. You know, I mean, what is wrong with
the simple thank you and acceptance, yes.
If someone feels that a compliment or an expression of love requires a response and they're nervous about it, they don't know how.
That's right. I agree with that.
And
there's something about, we've talked about this before, Teresa and I have, about not being able to say thank you and accept a compliment does you both dirt, because it takes away your compliment, which you most likely deserve. I mean, I think most people deserve compliments of some sort or other. And it also takes away from the other person. You're not letting the other person give. And
exactly.
How mean is that? I know it's not meant to be mean, but
it's a little bit of the verbal masochist sadist thing, you know, where you won't accept the compliment because you don't want it. You want to be criticized.
And also there's something nice about trusting another person's judgment. If somebody else says something good about you, maybe that's just the truth. Give that person the honor and the respect.
Yeah.
Sure.
I also found a lot of times, and I don't like it, it's disingenuous humility.
Yes.
You know, where it's not genuine. It's simply, I wouldn't want anybody to think I'm, you know, a big wheel or I've done something good. Why not?
Right. There's a definite line between modesty and that.
It's ego.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. And I have had people say I have a large ego, but in the end, I'm comfortable with who I am.
Yes. Well, I think that's supposed to be good.
And as children, we're told that you shouldn't have a big ego, right? I think some of that is enculturated.
You know, it may be, but I don't think in my generation our parents really understand the ego and the id. I think it's sort of a subliminal thing that we learn from the other generation that you can't be. Although I have to tell you, my mother is a very shy person.
Shy.
Mm-hmm. And she's very insecure, has low self-esteem, although she's a beautiful, gorgeous woman and always was.
I saw her one day when I was
living.
They
called
gorgeous.
My mother and my father the Beauty and the Beast. but she is never, ever, nor my father, ever told me not to be egotistical. They always told me to be whoever I wanted me to be. My father told me, you act like a man, I'll treat you like a man.
That's good parenting.
Well,
that's wonderful.
You know, and my mother encouraged me to be assertive, to learn to speak, to learn vocabulary, to express myself. And when I got in trouble in high school because I was a little bit over the top in terms of my behavior, they never jammed on me or criticized me. They came over, listened to the nuns, and then said, okay, you know, you did wrong, you screwed up, go ahead, think about what you did. So I don't know. I don't think that... I think there are parents who do that.
You know, I was going to say maybe perhaps your parents were a bit atypical.
Absolutely. You know what? I don't know about that, though. I think they were typical. It's just far, far more parents weren't.
Well, I think sometimes that not being too egotistical is not the swiftest or best way to say, don't let yourself go to your own head.
Exactly.
You know, you want to be able to say, be careful, you're going to drown in that water you're walking on.
You got it.
You know, and so there's kind of a line between that and health.
Well, it just makes me think of the magnet I have on my refrigerator with a man standing next to a cat box and the cat's sitting in it and he's going,
I know.
Don't ever think outside the box. So, you know, and that's a telling comment.
Yes. We just need to take a moment to remind our listeners that this is KUSF 90.3 FM. Love Letters Live. We're here every week at this time, and we hope you join us.
Thank you. Okay, I want to get to Michael's love letter. And I want to say, I can see, I know that Michael came with it already written. And it's, as he said, to all women. Michael's desire was to write a letter to all women, which we haven't had anyone do before. And I know that I think when we first talked, the feeling of this was somehow to let women know through that because of who they are and based on your love of women, that you want them to know certain things about men and about love, and you want to clarify.
Yes.
And so that they have a chance of walking down the right path in their relationships from
yes.
what you've learned.
But also, I mean, and it is in there, I want to, in a sense, express my gratitude to women.
Okay.
I also want to apologize to them. But in doing that, I want to give all of you, whatever insight I have, given the life I've led and the women that I've loved.
Okay, so this love letter is different from some and from all that we've had so far, in as much as it is to more than one person. This is a love letter custom designed for all women, and I know that we'll talk about it after. You're going to mail it to specific ones who have been in your life.
Yes.
Because a love letter, we say, not mailed, if it's, I mean, this is wonderful and beautiful, and if it isn't mailed, I don't think it's a letter. It's a wonderful essay and piece of writing, so we're going to turn what you feel into a letter, and I'm just going to ask you to start right in and read it to us.
My dear woman, I've loved you since age 16, when for the first time I experienced the subtle joy and intense emotion of intimacy with you in my mind, heart, and body. Our coming together in emotional and sexual intimacy was not the debasing experience many men call a conquest, my first lay or my first score. It was an experience wrapped in tentativeness, gradual, and even a little frightening for both of us. I did not have brothers or friends who were experienced and thus could educate me in the time-honored and, quite frankly, tragic traditions of macho male sexual conquest. No, I started my love of you, woman, with naivete, an open mind, open heart, an absolute fascination with the beauty and glory of your body, naked. Despite my youth, I was precocious enough to realize, in looking at your nakedness, even with a certain shyness, yet intense curiosity, that this was God's real canvas, and upon it he created the most remarkable work of art on earth, a woman's body, in all its colors, lines, contours, shapes, sizes, and nuances, art, pure art. From this wonderful, innocent introduction to you, I began my life journey of being deeply devoted to women, to loving women, to loving you. And what is love? I could not have defined it for most of my life as a man, even though I had been in love and loved a woman. It was a feeling, and it was also an act of will. I knew this, but I did not understand how it all worked, how it came together. I fell in love with you, my first encounter at that age of just 16, and was swept in the feelings it brought to me both emotionally and physically. From this beginning, and as I matured, I learned that I was not very good at getting laid, as so many of my macho male friends alleged they were. My encounters with you, which evolved into sexual ones, were almost always founded on a genuine interest in you as a woman, a willingness to share, to be open, and to trust. I did not play the game of seduction, and almost all of you with whom we shared our sex thanked me for this gratefully. The one-night stand or the deceit of love to get sex just didn't fit into my sense of moral well-being. I like not having to seduce you by some surefire method, technique, or game established by men of vast experience. I remember well one late afternoon lying with you in the back seat of a late mid-century Buick, and you mentioned how curious it was that men had so many lines they fed to women to get them to have sex. I asked you, "What is my line?" You answered, "That's just it, Michael. You don't have one." And then you unbuttoned your blouse and bra and invited me to gaze with wonder and appreciation upon your breasts. But I did not know what love was, even when I met you and married you. You, the woman of the wilderness, as we so fondly named you, my wife. I was unsure what love was, but willing to try, to learn. We fell in love. That marvelous feeling of losing oneself in another, the abandonment of the ego, and the foolish belief that everything about the other one was nearly perfect. It was not until about the 7th year of our long-lasting production, 2 remarkable children and over 20 years of friendship, love, and romance, that we realized we must engage in the hard work of moving from falling in love to learning to love. And we did, so gloriously. You taught me so much about being a man. You held my heart gently and helped it beat. But we learned that the ego, which seemed to disappear in the early years, comes back, and then the work of learning to forge a true and lasting love begins, and we did. We found our love was planted with the seed of a deep, abiding friendship, watered with respect, compassion, even admiration at times, and then we gave ourselves plenty of sunshine in the ray of romance. I am forever indebted to the Irish-born British thinker C.S. Lewis, who wrote of the emergence of romance or courtly love, quote, "Compared with this revolution, the Renaissance is a mere ripple on the surface of literature. I learned that romance was the sunshine of love, and without it, surely the flower would wilt, even perish. And I learned to live and breathe romance with you, and you returned this favor by feeling special, attended to, respected, and more than this, loved. It was not a game. It was a state of mind, an expression of myself. From the unexpected flower without occasion, to the unprompted words of respect, encouragement, even praise, or a quiet dinner cooked by me and the candles by the bathtub inviting you to join me, or the regular surprise of elegantly wrapped lingerie we would enjoy. For me, it was your natural sensuality, and for you, knowing I appreciated, even hungered for your beauty adorned by satin and lace. I cherish romance. I learned to love you and did so not for purely selfish reasons or sexual needs, but because you are a mirror of myself in a different gender. And in loving myself, I will love you. To you, woman, I urge you to encourage your men to look to their feminine side without fear, insecurity, or embarrassment, to touch it in their hearts, express it with their minds, to celebrate the feminine in them without insecurity, knowing that to do so will bring them closer to the heart of a woman. To do so will strengthen their masculinity, not threaten it. My beautiful and exceptionally wise daughter knows this, and she understands when her gifted boyfriend responded the other day to my statement that men lose this ability to acknowledge and turn to their feminine side. He said, "Well, maybe it's just that men cover it up." Ah, yes, wise words from a young man, and supported by C.S. Lewis, love struck late in life, who wrote of the English system of teaching young boys that it created men without chests. Men who can think with their minds and function with their sexual equipment, but have no heart. They learn to cover it up, the heart. In my life, I've enjoyed sexual intimacy with many of you. Without exception, all were exquisite and nearly all intimate, open, and trusting experiences. However, I have loved only 5 of you. From my first love as a teenager to the men of the wilderness, then to the woman who gave me the priceless knowledge that love is the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual and emotional well-being. And to the woman who graced my lonely existence with your lovely presence as my lover 2 despite the wounds experienced. And alas, my beautiful, soulful, complex artist, who gave me without a doubt the greatest gifts a man can experience later in life, the first, to learn the absolute beauty and glory of a completely exclusive and trusting love which blossomed into an odyssey, traveling with reckless abandon while we used our love as a shield against all the rest of the turmoil in the world, as well as within ourselves. And the second gift, the gift to experience the woefully painful magnitude and meaning of the time-honored thought, all great loves end in tragedy, and it did. Ah, but undaunted, I returned to being, open to intimacy and even to true love again. I do so without expectation that it will happen or anxiety that it will not. I will risk all to see if it will happen. And I look upon a day and night spent recently with you and realize, yes, love is always possible. I know how to love you, however flawed I am, and will continue to do so until my last breath on this mortal ground. I apologize for all of my gender who do not even know how to love. This is ignorance and a blight on our souls as humans and a burden woman has to carry. These men need desperately to be taught to open their minds, but even more importantly, their hearts. They need to learn to do this so something comes between the sexual equipment and their mind. That something is ethereal, mystical, and life-giving. It is the heart. The heart which can love you, woman, confidently, knowingly, passionately, and with romance. I also celebrate you, woman, and me, because in true love, we find what is the only real excitement in life, to discover the wonder and glory of being human. With love, Michael.
Hooray.
Yes. Wow.
That was
Why, thank you.
Wonderful. I thank you for bringing that here. And I want, and you said you were going to mail this to five women in particular, right?
There are five women that I mentioned from yes. my first love to my soulful artist.
And
my
will,
last.
They will each get a copy of this.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Will you be able, I know this is kind of a hard thing to do. I don't know if you can do it. We talk about letters being in your own handwriting. You can do this five
Absolutely.
Times in your own handwriting?
Absolutely.
And God bless
yeah.
you, mister. That's
wonderful.
Well,
I would
wonderful.
Be happy to do it that way.
Okay.
You know, in this day, my generation, the email is personal. It's not really what form, it's what's said. But I would write it.
You know, the reason I'm saying that is, first of all, I want to just point out, I mean, I know nobody needs this explanation, but I just want to say out loud what a beautiful example this is of sexual, historical, soul-revealing, and honest, and it's all in there. You know, people sometimes wonder how sexual and how steamy they can get in a love letter. A lot.
Yes.
It's wonderful. And I think those specifics...
I thank you very much for that.
It's beautiful. The specifics about in love letters, naked bodies, lace
lingerie.
Lingerie. I think that's what makes a love letter really something unique is the specifics. And you just talk about so much, so anybody who wants to listen to this again, of course, can. On our website, but I also want to say that doing it in handwriting, you're such a sensual, warm person, and sensual and sexual warm person, that when you do this in handwriting, you're sending each one something that you've touched physically.
Oh, I know.
You've touched it. You've probably held it to your heart. You might have put your lips to it. You are.
I may well.
You probably will. I mean, people do that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You will most definitely run your tongue along the edge of the envelope before you seal it.
Well, there are three of them are married.
That's not the point.
I don't know if that would be inappropriate.
But the point is that is how we seal
yeah.
envelopes. I mean, we have to lick them shut.
Yeah, I'll have to
I mean, I don't think people use those automatic glue flap things for
self-stick.
Yeah,
no,
self-stick.
No.
It just doesn't fit somehow.
Better yet, I might put a personal representation. I have a large collection of stickers.
Uh-huh.
Of different sizes, shapes, and messages, and some of them are just hearts, some of them are roses, and I'll seal the letter with that.
Perfect. So the love letter starts with the envelope, and I wasn't mm-hmm. even saying, you know, that running your tongue across the envelope needs to go just to people who are not married. I mean, that's something we do. We put a lot of ourselves.
I send my bills that way.
Yeah,
right.
I know. Even to the phone
right.
company, they get a little yes. Well, anyway,
I would like to give my email address again, so that if people
go
wish
ahead,
to
you
write,
do it in your voice here.
I'm a prolific writer. My email address is michaeljamessoul@aol.com, and it's michaeljamessoul. And I put the soul on there because it was the only thing after Michael James I could get.
Perfect.
I mean, AOL rejected me five times.
That's okay.
And I would like to write to our listeners that the Love Letters Live address is www.loveletterslive.com. If you would like to send us any comments that you have about this show or any show, please do that. If you have a question that you'd like to ask Janet, dear Janet, please send that along. She'll certainly answer it, or we may read it on the air for other people to learn.
Yes, and you know that Michael will answer you. And email is so appropriate and so good for so many things. And this is one area where if you want to get in touch with Michael or with us.
Right. So anything else to add, Janet?
Well, excuse me. I'm sorry. I think we're just about to say goodbye. I think Michael has covered so much in just the reading of this beautiful letter.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to do it.
Thank you.
It was a catharsis for me.
Good.
Thank you for showing.
And we'll be interested to see what it is for the people who received it. If you have anything to tell us, let us know.
Oh, I definitely will.
Okay.
So, just quickly, thank you for joining us. We hope you'll join us every week on KUSF 90.3 FM. We encourage you to put your loving thoughts into words and send them while you still have the chance.
And if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, just remember, and Michael's shaking his head, that writing a love letter is a special occasion, and you can certainly see that this one was.
Yes. So till next week, with love from Teresa
and Janet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.